Hello, this is Richard Min. I'm an entrepreneur, a fashion tech accelerator, and a VC and angel, and loads of other stuff. I have aphasia caused by my stroke. Aphasia is when you don't communicate and speak well. My intelligence is intact, so I listen and understand with no problem. And it's hard. I'm getting better, but it will take some time. I will beat you aphasia and stroke. You watch out, I'm coming for you. This is my podcast story. I'm okay, but you need to give me an intro.
Okay.
And then it's all good.
Okay.
I'm aphasia, and it's for my aphasia.
Mm-hmm.
Talking. Startups or VCs or Oculus, I don't care. But it's fun.
Absolutely.
What is your background, and what do you it's a background and just fun. What is your background?
Okay. So my actual background is mostly in investment banking.
Okay.
So I worked in New York, I worked in London, worked with Lehman Brothers, worked with Barclays Capital, spent like 11, 12 years with them in investment banking. And then... investment banking.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And then last place I worked as an investment banker was Hong Kong.
Hmm.
And in 2011, I was let go, unfortunately, mm-hmm. along with a whole bunch of people. And then I started a small startup. Almost by accident, I ended up with a small company building mobile apps for iOS mostly. We have a few apps for Android as well, but we published a whole bunch of apps. And then, you know, I got to know some people on VC side, and then I moved over to Korea.
Hmm.
And I worked with IDG Capital for a while, and then moved to current firm, which is the Capital One, which is Korean local venture capital company.
Okay.
And as you briefly mentioned before, we have several funds. One of them hasn't closed yet, but we got the commitment from Korea Fund of Fund. That would be like $30 million fund. We're co-GPing with a company called Colorful Next, which is Japanese VC. And that fund will be for investing in Korean startups that either develops game or has to do with games, including AR, VR, any other gaming techs. The focus of that fund is just that.
Is it really focused on the game or AR, VR technology?
Both of them. Mm. Yeah, we try not to narrow it too much, but obviously our co-GP partner, their focus is purely on gaming side.
Okay.
So we're aligning our interests so that for that fund, it'll be game development, whether it's a casual game, social games, or 3D platform, whatever, and also AR, VR. Hardware, software, technology, and whatnot. That's the focus.
So energy. I thought you were energy.
Ah, right. So Capital One, although that's a company that I work for, we basically have few other investment companies within the same group of companies, all owned by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a PE, there's a hedge fund, there's a kind of real estate investment operation. And, I focus on kind of cross-border transactions of all kinds, whether it goes under, venture capital firm or PE.
yeah,
or you know, or a real estate company. And one of the focus of, you know, our group is on energy, so particularly on renewable energy front. Mm. So we are working with energy storage system startup. I wouldn't say startup, actually. It's a fairly big company. It's not listed, but their market valuation is north of $200 million US already. So it's fairly well-established. Unlisted company, no, U.S. company.
Okay.
And we're working with them to kind of bring their product to Korea.
EFF?
Korea, yeah. Mm-hmm. Korea joint venture in Korea and things like that. So, you know, our firm generally, including our chairman, has pretty good connection on energy side in Korea. So we have a pretty strong interest on that side as well. Whether that's going to be under VC or PE doesn't really matter for us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a VC.
Yeah. I like to be. For me to come from more of a, you know, what kind of, you see, when I was in investment banking, I did research and also corporate advisory and so on and so forth. But that was all for like big listed, you know, yeah, established company, right? From there, for me to come over to VC directly would have been fairly big step.
Yeah.
But fortunately, you know, the companies that I worked for before, the IDG and also this, you know, my current company, I had an opportunity to work on, you know, bigger investment, not too early stage companies. So we'll make bigger investment, which means the company has to be fairly certain size. So it'll be kind of stepping stone. I'm completely interested in working more closely with, you know, companies with the earlier stage. But, you know, it'll take some time for me to actually get used to that, make that transition. And this is like a good way to move to the side.
So, early stage, well, current focus is early or not so early stage, and you want to move into early stage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, eventually. And that's my kind of career trajectory that I'm thinking. A couple of things, right? One is, I think that the boundaries between PE and VC is kind of blurring.
Yeah.
So a lot of VC, PEs are looking at smaller and smaller companies, you know, instead of taking control of the company and drive that transformation, they're happy to participate in a company that's growing really fast. And that's more of actually VC side. And that's happening already under the umbrella of PE.
And PE, private equity.
And VC is doing exactly the same thing, right? VC, you know, from the beginning, they invest in great ideas in amazing industries. That's going to have amazing growth with the right people, obviously. But, you know, as they grow, you know, it's usually the same guy who's going to make, you know, subsequent investment, which is where the money really is, right?
Yeah.
So because they know the company now and they can see the growth. Why would, you know, anyone let other people, you know, take that upside? So they will come in. And that as company grows toward the IPO, at some point, that's going to be more of a kind of key type of investment. So, you know, IDG, for example, IDG Capital, I don't think they necessarily distinguish between the two. They have they have capital funds and they have growth funds, right?
Okay.
So capital funds is kind of VC type of fund. That's how they kind of categorize it. And capital fund is more of PE side. And they have different teams. But at the end, you know, what determines which company gets more money from, whether capital funds or growth fund, is 30 million. If it's below $30 million, it'll come from, you know, the growth fund. Then if it's above 30 million, it's come from capital fund. Yeah, that's it. That's the difference, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Korea and US or some type of Europe is different or the same? In terms of amount
that we invest.
Yeah.
Well, I think all the companies that we've looked at in US or overseas tends to be bigger because of two reasons. One is we like to see, we like to be an active partner to the company. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, companies that we invest, if we invest in overseas kind of, you know, startups, we like to have some sort of angle that we can play in Korea. So okay. Whether, you know, so which means they're almost ready to enter another market, right? So they already have kind of established products, mm-hmm. right? Something to offer to Korean clients. So that's kind of where we focus on, right? It's not that there isn't a small investment we could make in US or whatever. There are plenty of them, mm-hmm. but it's very difficult for us to make that investment because one, it's going to cost a lot of money. Right, to just go abroad and do the due diligence and all that stuff. So it has to be a certain amount of investment to justify all that. And the second is because, like I said, we want to be an active participant of our investment. We like to see a Korean, you know, market to be developed, yeah. which means companies fairly of certain size.
And so you, I'm curious. You don't take in a seed or idea?
I don't see us taking a seed investment outside Korea.
Okay. Yeah. Idea is nothing. No. Idea and seed is you working towards or you... you working towards or your idea? I don't understand.
Me personally.
Yeah, I
love to create a company of my own at the end, right? So that comes from, you know, idea to all the way out.
Yeah.
So obviously I'm very interested, but personally very interested in new technologies. You know, trends that's going to change the world. You know, people getting together with just some ideas and create something out of it. I love to be part of that one day. So yeah, personally, I definitely am working toward earlier and earlier stage.
Yeah.
In Korea, let me add one more thing.
Yeah,
Korea, we are interested in seed stage company just because, you know, in Korea, we can actually properly monitor a company, work with them and so on and so forth, right? Even though it's fairly small amount of investment to begin with. But if it's, let's say we make that kind of investment, say, like California, I mean, you know, it's going to be very difficult for us to manage that, right? Okay. Even find out what's going on.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So when you say seed level, what would be sort of your ticket size?
We made a org investment, like, you know, $500,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when the company was basically, the company basically didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of put together a company.
So OAC is your, is your line?
Like
no,
average?
We could go lower.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I don't think we'll go Europe though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Europe will be too small.
Okay.
Well, we could do Europe. But, you know, with an expectation that we'll, you know, obviously the company we invest, you know, we want it to grow, right? So if I see the upside and Europe is the right amount, then maybe that's what we'll do.
For example, I run the fashion technology accelerator, and we take tons of money, but... EDUC from 5,000,000 to EDUC 50,000 to 100,000. We take that position.
Right.
Yeah.
But you guys are more of an accelerator.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's very early stage. I mean, it's very rare for us to get involved that early so far. But we have been thinking about it because we have a VC, we have PE, we have actually all that kind of stuff. Only thing that's missing is actually accelerator, right?
Mm.
So, you know, within the group, there are several conversations to actually create an accelerator, but we haven't gotten far yet. Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
And so, you're in terms of VC is good, but in terms of your personal, your person and take the money and build it yourself?
I haven't done that except once. My mobile app company was almost created by accident, because initially I started it just so that I can learn another computer programming language, right? So I used to program a little bit.
What language?
That's Objective-C.
Oh, yeah.
That's the language for, you know, iOS, right?
Yeah.
Now it's Swift or whatever, but that was some time ago. so I did that, but that was almost by accident. I am totally interested in creating a company.
So what company, idea phase, but what company do you think about creating?
Okay. I have many ideas. Obviously, if I'm convinced, then I won't be talking, I'll be creating by now.
Yeah.
Just thinking about different things. For the longest time, I gotta tell you, you can ask my friends, I talked about this for a long time. Like, there was, I think, there will be an opportunity, there will be a right time, I guess, to really create a utility computing, I think. And one of the things...
Utility?
Yeah.
Computing.
Computing as in, like, you know, as a service. That you don't really have to have a computer per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's always there. You can just draw its power whenever you
mm-hmm.
need. And that kind of thing. Just like electricity.
Sure.
Right? That kind of format. Obviously, there has been many attempts of a similar kind throughout the years.
Yeah.
Right? But one of the things that basically needs to happen for that, I think, is response time.
Mm.
Over the
response
network.
Time.
Yeah. So you basically will have, not only right now, a lot of people use Dropbox and, you know, Amazon, whatever, web services, and do a lot of computing basically completely on the, you know, the cloud-based. That's completely fine. But I think for it to actually make a difference or really truly become more of a utility computing environment that I'm thinking about, it has to be, I think, distributed. It has to have much quicker response time in terms of access, right?
Mm.
So you don't need, like, for example, if you want to use Amazon Web Services, you got to sit down on another computer.
Okay.
Right? That's how you use it. You log onto their system and then do that. And once that's done, obviously, if you're saying web services, then obviously people can log in, people can use that web services remotely. But in terms of actually using that computer, you will need another device. You will need another computer, basically.
Okay.
There are places, things like Twitch, things like Twitch and other kind of gaming platforms that actually does some... I forgot the name of it. Not just, you know, broadcasting the 3D game, but there was a concept of actually running that 3D game.
Gaikai.
What is it called?
Gaikai.
Okay.
Gaikai actually... Huh. CPO of Gaikai is actually Brandon, which is the CEO of Oculus.
Huh.
Right.
So there was a company that actually do... Not streaming, but cloud, almost the computing platform, where you can actually play a 3D interactive games through TV. The TV doesn't have a lot of CPUs, so it was sold to Sony recently.
So, what is...
Think about the implication. So, if you're actually playing 3D games, it requires a lot of computing power.
Okay.
What Twitch does is basically you play your game, well, connected to network and everything, but the majority of computing is done on your computer.
Okay.
And the end product, which is just a video, is basically broadcasted out.
Okay.
Right? That still requires a lot of computing on your side.
Okay.
Right? But what they were trying to do, and there are a few other companies like that, a few attempted, was that having that computing power necessary for 3D gaming done on the cloud side, and then broadcast back to you. right? Which requires very little computing power on your side and a whole bunch of computing power on their side.
Yeah.
And I think that that kind of thing makes a whole bunch of sense at the end, because if you look at computer, I think it's the biggest waste of resources ever created by a human being, right? I mean, look at it. My computer, I have like three computers, like three proper computers. While I'm talking to you, they're doing nothing.
Yeah.
It's not being used at all right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Clearly, they're not doing anything while I'm sleeping, right? Okay. I mean, even if you actually use the computer, you rarely use it like 100% of the capacity, ever.
Yeah.
If you could actually start sharing that, right, that computing power, I mean, you could get away with probably like 1/10 of what we have right now. Even less.
Yeah, no. It's... I don't remember the name. Oh, man. It's... computers act idly active, but... it's space.
SETI at home.
Oh yeah.
Yes, I know.
SETI at home.
At home. Oh, yeah. It's a search for extra. ET. Oh, whatever.
Yeah. But what is it called? That SETI at home.
Distributed computing. Ah, maybe? Yeah.
Distributed computing.
Yes.
Distributed computing. Yeah. Just like distributed computing.
Exactly. Yeah. So that kind of thing exists. But think about that. I mean, have you tried that? To do that, you basically have to download a whole bunch of data. It takes some time. It's just like really large size data file first.
Yeah.
And once you download that, it'll basically run, you know, whatever, you know, computing process. I don't really what's going on. Yeah. I don't really know what's going on inside SETI at all. But you know, it'll do your calculation, and when it's done, it'll send it back, right? And that's how that thing works. And because it's utilizing this unutilized computing power, it's been, you know, amazingly effective, right?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, sharing that computing power. What it's not doing is having that interaction with the user. You download a whole bunch of data once, you're basically running for hours and hours, and you send the result back.
Yeah.
That kind of thing can be done right now.
Yeah.
But gaming is different, right? Gaming, whenever you like tweak your controller, it has to calculate again and send back the result.
Okay.
So that's why I said initially what's important is a response time. This is network response time.
Okay.
And if you actually go mobile, 5G might be what it takes to actually make that happen, right? 4G is slow. 4G is not going
to
happen.
Yeah, but you want to build this system?
If not me, I think someone else should.
Interesting. So that's not a new problem.
Mm.
Yeah.
Problem exists for a long time.
So everyone is doing it, or nobody is doing it?
A lot of people like attempted, and obviously there's like, I mean, I've been thinking about this, but obviously reason why there is no company of my own is because I haven't solved all the problem, even in my conceptual stage. I think one of the key components would be that 5G network for this to happen.
Okay.
But also, we're really talking about completely different computing platform, right? So, like, Amazon could work where all the computing power is centralized, but that doesn't really solve the problem, because we're really talking about utilizing what everyone else has. Right?
Okay.
My computing power, when I'm not working on, you get to use it, you know, he gets to use it, and it doesn't have to necessarily go to, like, Amazon location. Instead, it'll have to find whatever computing resources available closest to me, because that'll be quickest in terms of response time.
Yeah, but it's network, right?
It is network, yes.
Okay.
The network would be a big component of it, right?
Okay, so, for example, you would control the network?
No. I don't think anyone should control it. Like, I've been thinking about this in a slightly different way ever since the blockchain and all that. So it actually makes sense on that side. So hopefully there could be a kind of completely decentralized network of computing resources that everyone can tap into. And this is the best part, I think. So that we could actually have nothing other than our mobile phone. Okay. And that will be our kind of access point. We don't need to have a computer anymore at all, right? But we'll have this tremendous computing power right behind us, right? That's going to come through my mobile phone. And this can be attached to, like, you know, 50-inch monitor, right?
Yeah.
So we'll have all the bells and whistles of computing power, but we no longer have to have actual computer at home, you know?
So the telcos or somebody has to use it, right?
People will use it.
Okay.
It could be, there could be many different kind of business models, but you know, Amazon Web Services obviously charge them on a monthly basis.
Yeah, yeah.
That could happen.
Okay.
You could actually, like, for example, if this kind of model, everyone can contribute to the network by actually buying a computer and attaching to the network.
And network, for example, SK or KT or something.
Yeah, anyone could do that, right? Anyone. Like, Amazon, for example. So, think about, like, this is, like, completely idealized situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But let's say there is a kind of platform built up that where everybody can use, you know, whichever is closest computing resources and through their phone, right?
Yeah.
So, your kind of benefit is the computing power and computing resources.
Hmm.
Obviously, your contribution will be either money,
yeah,
or either it's going to be computing resources itself, or money to buy the computing resources, right?
Okay.
Or electricity and everything. Right? So you can pay big guys like Amazon, who will maybe use that money to build up that network, or you can actually buy a huge computer yourself, like big desktop yourself,
okay,
and just attach to the network, and it will kind of have a system where it calculates how much you're contributing to the network versus how much you're using.
Yeah.
And my guess is, if you buy, say, you know, $3,000 desktop, and like me, I'm using like probably less than 5% of the time, versus, you know, when I'm not using it, the other 95% filled up by other users, obviously I'm getting a lot more value of it,
yeah,
as long as I can get that back somehow, right? And that's the exchange.
It's exchange, but you need people, right?
You do.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah. There will be a company, I think, behind that. There will have to be.
Interesting.
But it doesn't have to be a privately controlling whole thing, right? I mean, this whole, I think the idea works pretty well with distributed blockchain and that kind of concept.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it's going to match up, but, you know, you could actually have a platform, people who's developing the platform on an open source basis.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody contributes to build up system, build the system, you know, fair and square.
And open source system is the way to go. He and I been talking blockchain. And what is there saying about blockchain?
So, I mean, believe it or not, what Stan is talking about right now is already, some part of it exists,
yeah,
in
yeah,
BitTorrent.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We're using a distributed computing resources,
yep,
to, you know, share and download, you know, high, you know, a big size of content in much faster way than ever. So we're using that distributed computing powers,
okay,
right? And as far as the blockchain goes, I mean, other than what, you know, Stanley has mentioned, about the response time. I think basically what I believe what he's saying is it needs to be sort of seamless to what we are used to it, right? So if it can give sort of the seamless experience on the current device that we're using with the response time, like physical local devices, and people will use it, right? That's certainly a...
But what do you think?
Precondition. I think,
yeah.
Other than that, another thing is most critical, that's where the blockchain comes in, is the security and authentication. There's a bit of concern. All my data and personal data being up in the cloud.
Yeah.
And especially when it goes to the more of the like enterprise level, that's critical issues. But I think getting this blockchain technology and smart contract in place, that sort of alleviates a little bit of that concern. So there are quite a bit of, quite few startups in making decentralized distributed computing power sort of a solution, and also the gaming platform. I'm involved in Decentraland. We also leverage that concept as well.
Okay.
So everybody would need to have sort of their local server to manage, but. Their items and user data and so on and so forth. But as far as graphic resource goes and so on, you know, we were trying to leverage the distributed computing powers resources as well.
So your blockchain, you're for it eventually or not for it?
I think concept is amazing, and what it has achieved for Bitcoin, I think it works.
Yeah.
But almost for every other use, I think the current technology is pretty much useless.
Ah, right? Interesting.
But it's got good concepts. If they can actually develop it and make it cheaper and more efficient, then obviously, yeah, it's an amazing concept to have to remove that. You know, middlemen for you know, two strangers to trust each other. Right? Yeah. So it's a start, and it works. It works for Bitcoin, obviously. But I mean, it's got a long way to go. I think to establish in any other application. I think in generally, let me point out.
Wait.
So the thing is. I calculated this some time ago, so Bitcoin price was much higher and everything. But the percentage per year of new Bitcoin being generated versus the market cap was almost like 4%.
Okay.
Right? And then Bitcoin obviously generated when people, you know, the Bitcoin miners get their, you know, the Bitcoin block reward, right?
Okay.
So in a way, that's the cost of maintaining that blockchain. And if it's 4% per year, that's very expensive, right? We don't pay 4% to Visa or MasterCard,
okay.
Right? And they can process like, you know, I think like 20 some thousand transactions per second, whereas Bitcoin can, you know, main blockchain can process like 4, right? This is amazingly inefficient system. But that's what it takes right now to remove that middleman, right? Remove the centralized trusted party.
Yeah.
Which is required, which is necessary for Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Right? But for every other application, well, yes, we would like to remove that centralized, you know, trusted party, but at what cost? If it costs billions of dollars, would you really do it? Right? It's amazingly secure because it costs that much money. Right. If you were to actually hire IBM, give them that much money, I'm pretty sure they'll come up with something as secure.
Mm. Interesting.
Right. So it's a cost and efficiency. Doesn't really make sense for everything other than Bitcoin. But you know, obviously, it's got amazingly, you know, promising potentials going forward.
So, Bitcoin or not Bitcoin? In the future, it's future is, I don't know, but you're interested, but you don't invest, right?
Well, we'll invest in a good technology, of course.
Huh.
It's all about the future, I mean, what they can develop. Especially for blockchain projects, I think it's like, I've seen many. I've seen many, you know, blockchain companies and you know, cryptocurrency related companies. I met them, met quite a few of them. It's actually very difficult to find good investment on that side. Maybe it's because I don't fully understand. Maybe I'm not as enthusiastic as they are. That could be the reason, obviously. But you know, as an investor, managing other people's money, you know, I gotta have a conviction, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not convinced, then I shouldn't, you know, look at it. So far, I haven't seen that many projects that convinced me.
I see blockchain funds all the time. For example, not Line has one, and blockchain. I don't get it, but it's blockchain, and that's it. I don't understand, but it's all confusing to me. I want to learn.
Let me just give a bit of my take on this. I mean, I certainly agree with Stanley that there are too many blockchain projects out there, and it's quite...
Wait, Korea, for example, is blockchain central.
Yeah, and so is it many other places. And I think the reason that it has now given such a perception to investors,
mm-hmm.
that many of the blockchain projects are not good, I believe because how the whole industry has gone thus far and its approach, and the whole super hype around the blockchain.
Yeah.
You know, at the early on, many of the blockchain now have gotten raised a lot of money, did get their money even not having much solid white paper. But what's white paper is just concept,
yeah.
right? And somehow they were able to raise, you know, millions of dollars, without actually needing to have the product and just concept, because at that time the market was quite different from where we were, so. I think that drove sort of a bad taste to many of the traditional investors that, oh, this is something that they cannot trust. I mean, you and I invested in the company. It's been around for now almost 8 years.
Yeah.
And it is starting to see some meaningful revenue. So we know what it actually takes one company to, from a concept, to prototype, to get invested and get to the market, get to the clients, and start making revenue. It takes time,
yeah.
right? But many of these companies thus far, actually gotten money first and then product much later on. So in the future, and that's one side. And the second point is that I truly don't believe that we need that many currencies. You know, there are just so many, because each project would need to yield some sort of currency,
okay.
yeah, token, right? So, but I am already confused when I travel to Thailand, you know, Taiwan, and then China, to Japan and Korea and US, I already have too many different coins, and that itself is very confusing. Just to have this so many blockchain currency, it just doesn't make sense to me. But I do believe there's actually merit to the technology that what some of these companies are developing. Some of them are quite exciting, and then decentralizing makes sense. So I do want to invest, and then I do want to put my time into incubating companies. One that is trying to do reverse ICO. So they have an existing business, and not for the mean of raising extra money to it, but it actually makes sense to implement blockchain technology to their existing business. I think it could be very exciting. And they do have solid blockchain technology, whatever it means, even like what Stanley mentioned, like distributed computings or distributed game platform, or user authentication, whatever it is, and they have a solid blockchain technology without actually trying to get the coins out and then get the bubbly investment. I think that excites me. So many cycle, you know, we've been around the season enough to see that there's a, in technology, when there's a burst, there's a super hype, it settles down and flattened a little bit, and then it starts to mature. We see in the blockchain industry, we will see that like much quicker, and many of non-substantial concept with a very much not thought through white paper kind of projects, it will disappear. But some of them, I think it will be worth noting soon.
Interesting. I got out of blockchain years ago, but I definitely still see potential. I don't know if you know that travel company we know.
Yeah.
What's that called?
Travel DMH.
Yeah, DMH. It's travel and blockchain, and it's really good, but he got a lot way to go.
I mean, this is something that I've been asking myself, right? One is, I think there will always be a need for decentralized currency, whether that will be Bitcoin or something new, or that I don't know. But there is enough underground economy in the world.
Okay.
Once the currency goes completely digital, which I believe 100% will happen.
Yeah, it will happen.
Then
eventually.
they will need a different payment system away from the government, right? And Bitcoin right now, or any other cryptocurrency in the future, is pretty much the only way, I think. So there will be room for some sort of decentralized crypto payment system that's necessary in the future. So that's that side. But for everything else, so-called this utility coins, where you know company offers a product or service and then they coinize that and sell that stuff. For that to, I think, make sense, you will have to be like global company that does hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue. Right. And in that vein, what I ask myself is, let's say Apple does an ICO.
Okay.
How would their coin economy work? Let's say Facebook does an ICO.
Okay.
How would their coin economy work?
Yeah.
And I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I thought I kind of understood, you know, what's going on and how these guys work and everything, but let's say these companies actually do have some value to add to their community and their services, their clients and product set and whatever. But if we were to turn that company into ICO model, how would we do it? And I have no clue right?
No clue.
That means no one really kind of figured out, you know, how this kind of fits in with actual services and products that people actually, you know, sell to their customer. That's what I think.
I agree totally. I want there to be blockchain, but I don't know what it is.
I think you're right.
I don't know. I'm reading it, and I don't know what it is.
So that's exactly why I said, so when I came back from China, and in Korea, I find out blockchain is everywhere, and then everybody is like, you know, so hyped about blockchain. And I said, then I need to go buy some books to study about it. And then I said, this is not working. What I and decided to do is, why don't I just get involved in one project and learn myself? And therefore, I actually got involved with this company called Decentraland.
Yeah.
And learning as I go. And then, I mean, you're absolutely right. Do they have all the answers? They don't. And is that necessarily all bad? Not necessarily. You know, they're figuring out as they go. And that particular part actually makes things quite exciting.
Yeah.
So, and then there's actually room for your contribution as well. So, yeah. I mean, it's exciting time when there's unknown factors and trying to solve each technical problems and business problem as we go along. That's where, you know, where the big company cannot do, where the startup is contributing, I believe.
Politics. You need politics and cryptocurrency and politics don't mix. What did you say about that?
You know, politics as the traditional politics?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
politics as a government versus cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a tough topic that I don't want to even get into. therefore...
Get into it.
in Korea, you know, I like to position myself as not somebody promoting ICO, but cultivating blockchain technology. Because that part will need to happen regardlessly. But I do see a point where it's a bit concerning or it's a bit pity, is that two years ago, I mean, Korea is becoming sort of the mecca for blockchain.
Yeah.
And there has been a lot of excitement around it. And there's still, especially for younger generation, you know, the Korean students are, you know, very well educated. And you know, there's, you know, science and engineering driven guys. I mean, they were all into blockchains, and they were very much relevant in the market, and then everybody was very interested in, you know, what's going on in Korean market. I hope that Korean government find a way to leverage this opportunities.
Yeah.
I think the worst thing could happen is that we don't make a rule. We don't set up sort of a foot down and this is how it's gonna be governed. I think
you don't make a rule?
Huh. No. So right now what drives away, and even so many of the Korean startups or the even big like a Kakao, I mean the projects they actually set up that entity in Japan, right? Because there's such uncertainty, right? So they are afraid that how the policy will, you know, change. So therefore, they're, you know, setting up the company elsewhere. I think, you know, we need to be very transparent and then very clear about how are we gonna kind of tax people and govern people, each startups? And if we make that rule very transparent and easy to follow, I think that would help. But this back and forth and uncertainty on how we're gonna handle the blockchain and at the absence of the policy has driven away many good opportunities, and we're losing ground in global setting, which we established last couple of years in Korea. Yeah.
Interesting. You?
Well, listen, I think we already mentioned that currency, the government-issued currency, is going digital, right? It's already, I think, a long way there in places like Sweden, where they have their own government-sponsored system. In Korea, I mean, I carry like 10,000 in cash, but that lasts like a couple of months, right? Because you don't use cash, you use credit card. Yeah. And those are digital transactions. So eventually, everything I think will go digital, and there's reason for that. Once you have that, it's much easier to test people. Once much easier to see how money flows, who's spending, who's not spending, all that kind of stuff. From government's perspective, it's completely positive. Although digital currency and cryptocurrency sometimes go hand in hand, but cryptocurrency like Bitcoin is completely opposite of that, right? From government's perspective, that's something that they cannot touch.
Yeah.
Right? It's completely outside their jurisdiction.
Outside?
So, if, let's say, for example, in Korea, a lot of people started using Bitcoin everywhere that government cannot track, government will stop that. That's just never going to happen. In not just Korea, anywhere. Right?
Yeah.
Government needs to have ability to tax people to operate, right?
Yeah.
So they cannot lose that power. So in that sense, you know, this you know, cryptocurrency, decentralized currency, digital currency that's not backed by government becoming any country's main currency, I think it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Right? They will go to war before let that happen.
Go to war, that's what I say. It's war and it's digital currency, no, cryptocurrency, and I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of scenario, I don't think it's possible, right? Yeah. Government will have to have an ability to tax and follow the transaction. So that's one thing. I think that's the kind of... one of the reasons why the response to the whole cryptocurrency from various governments has been pretty slow, because you know, any way you look at it, it's actually pretty slippery slope.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you actually put any kind of credibility on this, more people obviously join in, and you're in a way promoting this currency to go where you know, you as a government don't want it to go, right?
Yeah.
This has to be a marginalized, you know, small kind of niche payment system that it is now, right? I don't think government really has, you know, any upside to promote this thing as a currency. But at the same time, it does come with a lot of, you know, amazing, you know, concepts and projects and you know, that could actually you know, benefit the society, right? So they're in a tough spot.
So 30 years from now, what do you think cryptocurrency is going to be? 30 years from now,
I think cryptocurrency, or the main currency, will still be government issue.
Okay.
Government issued cryptocurrency, digital currency, whatever you call it, that will be the main currency, right? So most of, well, I'll say almost all of my transactions doesn't require a cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah.
Why not use, you know, currency that I know and issued by government, and I know it's fairly stable, you know, for most of my, you know, transactions, that does the job, right? But let's say I'm a drug dealer, which I am not. then I will need to find another system.
Right? Yeah.
And there will always be people, you don't have to be a drug dealer, but there will be always underground economy of some sort, and you know, people who wants to hide their transactions, right? For that kind of thing, if we actually go fully digital, where every currency transaction is traceable by government, you know, there will be a strong need for something other than that, right?
Interesting.
And that creates the market, and people will figure out, you know, how they get that done. And right now, I don't see anything other than like Bitcoin or Ripple or whatever, these kind of things to actually, you know, to cover that market.
What do you think?
I mean, it's hard to predict, but
predict.
I give my piece to it. I think I worked for Sun Micro Systems when I was in Silicon Valley. And I thought that, wow, when this company does get really successful, it was successful then, what I felt is that, wow, this will be something that nobody actually realized there is such technology. It's just sit on the back end.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it happened, right? Now we don't, you know, back then, making the internet server was like big thing, but now who cares? I mean, it's up in the cloud and nobody knows, right? We use it in daily life. So for blockchain to be successful, and I think some part will be that way, but it will be something that we don't even realize exists. And it serves need for technology and people, authenticating and smart contract and so on and so forth. So I think technology size, I think that's what's going to happen, and I hope it to happen. From the currency side, I have to tell you, I'm not like I'm with you guys. I'm not quite sure, you know, the world need this many different currencies, and certainly, I think by that time, you know, we will figure out the traditional currency, and then how the crypto, one of a few cryptocurrency, will, how it will work, coexist with the traditional currency, so that it will be like another country's currency, like how we deal with it. So it will be stabilized, and then some of these big coins will exist, and they learn to coexist with the current currency. And it will be completely governed, and there will be a transparency on it, and it will be more of the global kind of Kakao Pay, WeChat, you know, Pay kind of thing, but it could be utilized in a global basis. But I could see that there's one for the overall like travel purpose, or one for the gaming purpose, but there won't be thousands of it. Right, so it will be consolidated, and then we will see some vertical, but particularly useful one that actually creates value for the end users.
Interesting. Interesting. I want to know the current state of crypto's currencies. I don't know.
They're just throwing at a wall.
There are obviously many areas where the concept of this kind of trusted, you know, trusted third party not being necessary is very, you know, beneficial for everyone involved, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's many projects that involving like having a blockchain backed real estate record.
Yeah.
Shipping industry already kind of form a consortium with IBM to do the whole, you know, trading record back and forth on the blockchain and whatever. But at the end, right, it's any kind of network or how secure the system is, like, you know, the chain is as strong as the weakest link, right?
Yeah.
So blockchain fundamentally have an issue when it actually comes to real world application.
Right.
Yeah.
So because whatever that is recorded on the blockchain, which is digital data, has to represent a real world data. For example, let's say we, you know, keep track of this water bottle through the logistics system. through the logistics system. You know, so that everyone, let's say this is milk, right? Mm-hmm. So it's perishable, we're in China, let's say, and we want to know where this is produced and how it moved around, mm-hmm. what temperature this was kept, all the way down to consumer level. Amazing application for blockchain technology, and I think there are many companies who are trying mm-hmm. to do exactly that, right? So, you know, this will have a record where it was produced on the blockchain, but by the time it gets to consumer needs to be sure that, you know, this is that thing on the record, yeah, yeah, right? And there has to be a connection between a real world
yep.
to the digital record. Yeah. And I don't think there is such technology that exists that can actually deliver that
right.
on a cost-efficient way that's as secure as the blockchain itself.
Are there companies?
Many are
yeah,
trying.
Yeah. Not, I mean, that's for sure a very difficult example. But on sort of energy side, there's a sort of hardware company. Like, usually, the companies so far making sort of hardware-driven ledger, the wallet
right.
Devices on the blockchain side, they're going tapping onto that.
Okay.
Kind of side on the IoT side, because you're absolutely right. Yes, after we getting the trust data from the real life, now that's the origin. But how do we trust that origin, right? So there's actually encrypted, like small plug where it can actually authenticate what happened is exactly what happened on the real life.
Mm-hmm.
So, but for many other applications that where there's no a way to actually get the digital form out of the original source, yes, it's going to be difficult.
Bitcoin works because the whole thing is digital, right? There's not a single piece in the ecosystem that's actually physical, right? Everything is digital.
Yeah.
And another thing is that Bitcoin blockchain, in a way, is inseparable from Bitcoin itself, right? Mm-hmm. So if anyone actually realizes, if a community realizes that the Bitcoin blockchain has been hacked, the value of Bitcoin would vanish.
Okay.
So that actually, you know, doesn't give any incentive anyone to actually hack the system unless they are certain they can hack it without everyone knowing it.
Okay.
And I can see in the future, we all got to understand, we've been using many pieces of this technology we call as blockchain now, but we didn't call it as blockchain. It was like encryption, you know, distributed network, and things were around, right? And then somehow, because of the hype of the whole thing, we're just wrapping everything as a blockchain.
Right.
But there's great pieces of variation of technologies. It's actually gathered in there, and we may no longer call that as a blockchain, but there are good technologies inside of, you know, what we call it as blockchain, and then some of them will certainly benefit on future technology.
Okay.
And we may call it something else.
So, blockchain is 1% is nice and 99% fail.
No, I don't say that.
No, actually, I would call it as the reverse.
Oh.
All right?
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Yeah. I think the way many of projects got funded recently have given the blockchain of sort of the black reputation, right? But what's inside of it, there are aggregation of a really good technologies and entrepreneurships.
Interesting.
All right. So,
look, a blockchain itself does what it's supposed to do. That's meant by the inventor, right? Which is to provide that third party you know, trusted third party role yeah. without having to have a trusted third party for Bitcoin. That's how it was invented, right? So it does that job nicely. And I see a whole bunch of amazing applications for other things, but it's going to take time, right? We got to develop this technology further. We got to find the right application. And it's not just, it's a piece of technology. It all depends on how you use it. And we just haven't found the right product or right application for it. Or maybe it needs further modification, you know, to actually use for different applications. But I think as a technology, I think it's amazing.
But yeah, for sure, what has ended,
okay,
for sure in the industry is that, so, you know, you have thought of some really great ideas and write up some really nice looking paper and then try to raise millions of dollars. Ain't gonna happen nowadays on the blockchain.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, it's, yeah, maybe there are some ideas that people have not thought about it, but that time has certainly ended. You know, investors, angel investors, or institutional investors, they're all looking for a substance and exact technologies or business model around the blockchain company, and with a just like any other startups that we've been dealing with, team members, team dynamics, leadership, product, that will all need to be examined thoroughly, and it needs to be more than blockchain, it needs to be business to get invested in.
Okay.
I absolutely agree. Like, I mean...
wait. You were... That's how it basically ends, but and it ends kind of funny, but it's the first one. But I want to improve it. But Stanley O and Andrew Kim, that's their story, and I will see you later. That is my podcast story. See you later.